Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today's podcast is very trending. We are going to talk about longevity with one of the world's longevity experts. It's Dr. David Liu. David is a cardiac surgeon. He's a longevity tech entrepreneur and a philanthropist, and he's really dedicated to extending human health and health span. And he's founded several tech platforms, including Longevity Docs, which I take part of. And this is the first physician network that's focused on precision longevity medicine. And he is such an interesting thought leader this year. He's been featured in Wired, Men's Health, The Hollywood Reporter. He's spoken at the CES, the Milken Institute, the United Nations World Humanitarian Summit. So it's such an honor and a privilege to have him here. David, welcome to the podcast.
Dr. K, thank you so much. And listening to all of that, and really humble and grateful to be in this journey with so many other doctors, and sharing what we love most is really practicing medicine and transitioning into educating the next generation of physician. So
I
thank you so
agree.
much for having me.
Thank you for joining. And I think this topic is so top of mind and on the tip of everybody's tongue. Longevity medicine is becoming a whole cultural movement right now. It's not just a medical concept, but from your perspective, what kind of forces are driving the shift? What's making us all so interested in living longer and healthier?
I think it's not. I think we're talking about it right now, but that was always humanity, holy grail in a way, right? We always wanted to defy death, and right now we have an understanding on what lives mean in terms of biology. And so I guess we are. There's two things merging: is the myth of living longer and almost being immortal, which have been, I would say, a discussion for many millennials and civilization. And right now the biology and the science is catching up. We, in the past decades, starting to understand the mechanism of aging. Several publication look at, obviously, the Yamanaka factor, the hallmark of aging, understanding the pathways that lead to accelerated aging. And so I think this is, two words are emerging, like this cultural movement that's been started, I would say, probably like 3,000 years ago, I would say, and this new type of medicine and technology. Now, I think the shift that changed everything happened during the pandemic. People didn't want to die, and so they didn't want to live longer per se, but they didn't want to die too early. And I think that's what was the wake-up call. A lot of people said, hey, I don't think I'm healthy enough to fight the external factors, those environmental threat. And so they started to look at the health as, first of all, it was a fear to lose health, but as well, it was an asset they wanted to protect. And so now you have this Venn diagram where you have a population, a civilization that is aware of the value of health, the value of life, the value of maintaining the biology at I would say the optimized biology. And then you have a cultural shift, right? And this cultural shift comes from the technology. It comes from the understanding of science. And we have more and more tools again today to understand our human body. But I think last is we have as well an economy around longevity, right? And so what I think years ago when we started to talk about prevention, right? So as a cardiac surgeon, obviously I was the end of the chain, right? And so when we were coming a little bit before, you were talking about prevention. Prevention was never something people were excited about, right? And so I think we started to transition from a preventative model, which was a little bit, how do I say that? In a way, underutilized, right? By a lot of the population. If you look in America, the annual wellness services are not, I think, are utilized only by 10%. of the people that can have access to it, right? And so to now something that is more aspirational, and based on that, an economy started to be built on top of it, from precision biomarkers to imaging to data, AI, wearables, testing, concierge medicine, and now it's getting into a little bit more mainstream, being accessible to a lot of people through online services, but as well integrating academia. And I think that's where we're seeing as a shift, like you're saying, is it started as a niche, and now, probably became a movement, and from movement has to become a standard, and from standard will become an institution. But if you look back in the days, medical school where everyone could build a medical school, and it was like less than 100 years ago in the US, which is really interesting to me. Emergency medicine was not a specialty, right? It was something we're doing in hospital, and all of a sudden you had urgent care popping up outside of the hospital. And so people are saying, well, what's going on? Why do we have urgent care coming out of the hospital? Obesity medicine was not something we were talking about. There's no board of obesity medicine back in the days. And so I think everything is shifting, but what I think is the most important is the will from the doctors practicing every day. And doctors have been, they started medicine to help people. And as soon as you get in in the system is here to treat the disease and save life. And I think the system is doing that extremely well. Now, obviously, it's only a part of the population, right? You're only seeing the sick. And so what happened with the rest of the population that was ignored because they were not sick enough, right? They were waiting for the sickness to arrive to be taken care of. And I think you have an awareness in this, in the medical community saying, hey, I want to be as well part of this tribe, trying to help people before they get sick. And so that's why I think the convergence of the demand, right, from the patient, the technology being able to understand disease or state of disease before they become an actual disease, understanding aging at the biological level, and then the technology, which is now more affordable. I mean, if you look at it 20 years ago, it probably cost $1 billion to sequence the genome. Now it costs $100. And so I think as we're going to become, and when I say we as the whole global community of physicians, we're going to become more aware of the transition from a healthy state to a sick state, and because in between there is nothing today. And so this slow transition to a state of disease is mainly because we age too fast. Right, obviously, if you get another type of disease, that's a different story. But most population are aging, and they're aging with disease. And so, if we can prevent that, that's going to be an immense impact on the population and civilization. So that's what I think longevity medicine is becoming a movement. And I don't think it's. I don't think no one started it. I think it's a combination of different forces and dynamics who came together, and now you have something really emerging because there is a demand for it.
That's interesting. There's almost like a merging between the fringe biohackers who we read about, doing all sorts of exotic non-medical interventions. And then, like you said, traditional medical health, which really is geared to just emergencies, save people from death and critical emergencies, and have the infrastructure is built all around, preventing death and dying. But you almost have to be practically dead or dying to get care at that level in our healthcare system. So now it's kind of the merging of these two fields in the middle where we can take the science and, hopefully innovate. How can we get around what the problem I feel that we're now facing is too many people coming into the longevity space and people coming in without evidence-based medicine, without really interest. Importantly, we need to follow guidelines and look at hopefully large-scale clinical trials before we start recommending things to people. I don't know your thoughts on this, but I'm very curious to know, like, how do we prevent too many people from the marketing side and the business entrepreneurial side getting into the field of medicine when they are not really pr promoting guidelines for, scientific-based care?
Yeah, I would say education. Education is the number one thing, right? Is you want to educate your patient, you want to educate the public, you want to educate the investors, you want to educate the media, but you want as well an education that is made by people who are legit, right? And so what does that mean is most of the time people have opinion, right? When you say, yeah, they're educating on or promoting product, I think, yeah, you can have an opinion, right? It's really open to have an opinion. But I think having an expertise and making recommendation has to be made by by the people who know what they talk about. And so without saying that who should own and who should do what, I think what is really important is medicine is medicine, right? So is it performed today by doctors or is it performed by someone else? So is it the tech industry? Is it an AI? Is it the large conglomerate, or is it the hospital, or is it the physician? And so I think this is where the question should be, a question that every patient should ask themselves: who do I want to give my trust to? Right. And so as soon as you start asking this question as an individual, then you might find the answer. Do you want a biohacker who might know a lot about optimizing some pathways because they did it on themselves? Do you want a large commercial enterprise organization? Or do you want a startup with several young founders from the Silicon Valley? Or you want a doctor that is trained, or doctors who doesn't know yet about longevity care or longevity science but wants to learn? So I think it's all about the positioning. And I disagree that there is too many people. I think there's too many interests, right? And conflicting interests. Yes, I think the more we have educated professionals, and that can come from scientists, economists, healthcare providers or professional, obviously physician, pharmacist, and healthcare leaders, I think that's what's going to shape the ecosystem, right? And the idea of having an ecosystem is everyone can raise the bar together, right? And so if you're able to do that in a coordinated way where we support each other, the technologists support the science support the clinician helps support the research is supported by the policymaker, and therefore the industry can support it as well. I think there is this beautiful orchestra of common vision. And obviously, there is some commercial interest for many people. But at the end of the day, what we are looking for is to probably become something that's going to be scaled, is going to be impacting a lot of lives, the same way antibiotics did or imaging did, right? So you need a little bit of both. I think you need a lot of excitation. And so that's what happened when you have a new field emerging. So you're right, there's so much interest today. So many different dynamics and investment, right? So it becomes sometimes confusing for the patient. It can be confusing for physician saying, because I don't know, I say it doesn't work, because I have no time, I cannot learn about it, and because this is not something I can access easily, I will deny it. But the future is a bit different. I think the next generation of physician will be, this is the type of medicine I want to practice. I want to be a doctor because I want to help people, right? Yes, I want to be saving life. If there is enough anaphylactic shock, for instance, I want to be preventing diabetes before it happens. I've seen my aunt having that. I don't want my grandmother to have a stroke. That's doable. And I want my mom to be able to remember my name without having Alzheimer's. Can we do that? Can we go in the direction of a world where it's going to be possible? That's the type of world I imagine. And so you want the next generation of a professional to be excited about it. And so I'm just not thinking about physician, the nurses, right? The physician assistant, the scientist and pharmacist developing all the procedures, compound and studies. I think it's amazing to see this whole world coming together because they're excited about seeing something in a different way. So
True. I
you're
feel
right.
I the only thing I worry is that longevity will become commoditized, that successful right now, the best longevity measures are accessible to the very ultra rich, And that I think the mainstream people are seeing this kind of longevity management, which is getting GLP-1s from an online provider where it's you may not even have a physician interaction ever. You're just getting drugs shipped to you or ordering peptides, or I'm seeing so many, gym combination gym settings where they are turning it into a longevity spa situation and you're able to get your peptides on the side. So I feel like there's that distinction that we need to not commoditize. We need to have, hopefully at some point, maybe David, you'll be the one to innovate a curriculum for what real longevity, medicine training would look like, and even like bringing it into practice to be a certified longevity type of provider. You need a certain level of educational, train courses you've been through and then understanding of the scientific rigors of it. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for mentioning that. I think you're totally right. The gym are going into it, the digital platform, the hotel, and I don't think we can stop that, but we can support it. Right. And so if you don't have to open a practice, but you can run your practice in a gym, right, where patients come to and trust you because they're already a gym member, I think you get both of the two worlds, right? And so I think they're already excited about it. They want to learn more and they want a trusted guidance. Now, today, like you said, the gym doesn't know, right? When you own a gym, and let's talk about a small gym, right? You own a gym, you're not providing medical care. However, we're starting to see different type of collaboration. And so we have, doctors that are opening gyms with a clinic into it, right? So they know what they talk about, right? And I think it is interesting to see that. And then you have a larger gym saying, okay, we're going to open a gym, and then we're going to open a clinic into it, a clinic totally different. And so you're merging those two words together. So yes, I think the beauty is we have as physician the opportunity to guide those new industries, and then to have a chief longevity officer in the gym, for instance, right, shaping the protocols, shaping the intervention, and helping deliver evidence-based care, and having as well a population that is able to monitor themselves, having great compliance and providing, outcome that can be monitored, right, and published. So you're talking about, learning. When we started Longevity Docs, I mean, I give you a little bit of the story. It was really interesting. I started the first program on prevention and preventive medicine in 2014. When I came back from Africa, we were doing cardiovascular screening with mobile clinics, and someone said, "You're doing that in Africa, we need it in New York, right? So why don't you just go and do some, screening and build that?" And so this is what I did in, 12 years ago. Now, fast forward 2020, and by the way, we were doing that in gyms, and in airline with airline companies, in lawyers' offices, corporate world. In 2020, when COVID hit, my wife had COVID really early on. So I started to aggregate a lot of different data from wearables. I mean, she was isolated in the room, and collecting them on an app, sharing that with different doctors. And then one day I met another doc and say, "That's what I was trying to do with my practice. Why don't we do it together?" So I started to build a platform and a longevity-focused practice. And since then, obviously, it was really hard to find doctors that were trained. So Longevity Doc is born from that statement. Started a small group of 20 doctors on WhatsApp group, and now we have, probably more than, let's say, 1,400 doctors who applied to join Longevity Doc across 68 countries and territories in the world. So it just show how fast is growing and the interest. But yes, we created now the certification, the first longevity medicine certification, by 14 faculties, 15 faculties, 100 hours. You can access it from anywhere in the world. And the idea is to bring this knowledge from what is longevity medicine, what are the pathways of how do you understand aging in a way, right? General medicine. The new biomarker of aging, how do you leverage that in your practice? What are the protocols? What are the type of intervention that we have today? And you were talking about all the different interventions from the one that are probably less known and regulated today, exosome, peptide, stem cell. We need to still understand that because I'm sure you have patient coming and say, this is what I've read, this is what I've tried, this is what I want. And so this is what you have to know to answer the question, right? And I think it didn't exist. And so we wanted to create a place where people, I mean, these doctors felt heard, understood, and felt safe to learn again. And the idea is to be able to democratize longevity medicine, to bring that to institutions. So we're discussing now with academia to bring that type of knowledge to academic center, right? And to make that, an option for residents, for doctors, and even from students to learn about what will be the future, integrating data, wearables, evidence-based research, learning how to promote and communicate safely with ethics, right? That's not something we learn in medical school. We never learn about doing a podcast, right?
I think this and that I think medical specialties are so slow to evolve. Like we've seen this year, the reversal of the estrogen black box warning and finally hormones becoming something accessible mainstream, or understanding that these hormone receptors keep our, keep us young. But like, for example, my husband's an interventional cardiologist. He goes to meetings all the time. I don't know when you're going to have a cardiology meeting that incorporates any element of longevity medicine. I've been asked him, I've seen so many studies that show that MI post heart attack patients benefit from taking NAD or NAD precursors to improve, mitochondrial function after heart attack. And like, they're just, he's so, top of mind, state of the art. He does all the high tech procedures, but cardiology has not yet evolved to that, thinking. They're starting to do experiments with people.
You're right. You're right. I mean, we have a cardiologist that was really a preeminent interventional cardiologist like your husband, and indeed, right now he really jumped into it, trying to understand all the mechanism of atherosclerosis, the inflammation, how the endothelium, the glycocalyx, what causes the pathology, right, of ischemia. And atherosclerosis is a complex disease in a way. We think it's only cholesterol sticking to the wall, and there is a lot of things going on, right? From like I said, without getting into the details, but from the inflammation to the hemodynamics of it. And so yes, it is almost like a new specialty that you have to learn. When you're an interventional cardiologist, you did cardiology, but right now you're doing the intervention of it. And the same way, a cardiac surgeon is, I would say, operating and changing valves and doing CABGs. We're not cardiologists, right? I mean, we're not preventative cardiologists, and we're not physiopathologists, right? And so I think even within the cardiovascular specialty, there's so many subspecialties, and that I think, and that's why I always say longevity medicine, longevity science or medicine can be a layer on top of every specialty,
They
right?
really
You
can.
don't have to do that alone, but you can have a little understanding. I mean, we were studying stem cell, I remember when I was a resident, which was 20 years ago, right? And so as as a dermatologist, stem cell, I'm shown, a lot of different, I would say, mechanism and outcome. Yeah, it's not used for everything, right? It still needs to be demonstrated, but we were studying that back in the days. And so that's where I think is it takes time. I think you're totally right. From the government to change policies, to academia and then large society organization to change guideline, it takes decades. And
It's gonna
so
take decades. Every
it takes
cardiology
decades.
trial is like 60,000 people have to enroll before they'll even think it's a worthwhile,
Exactly. But
but
cardiology was not a specialty 50 years ago, right? Like, and I think this is what I think is really interesting. What we take for granted today was fringe and pioneer, right? Developed by back in the days. Cardiac surgery was not something, we were biohacking. I mean, when I say we, the community of cardiac surgeon, biohacking to create a bypass, right? Cooling the body, that's not something that was in guidelines, right? We had to think about it. How do you protect the brain? And so I think, yes, there's a lot of things that are so normal today, right? Obesity medicine, hormonal care, Like you said, back in the days, even 20 years ago, that was French. 50 years ago, it didn't exist. And so that's what I want to open the eyes as well to other doctors. Be open-minded. Be again the student you used to be, right? Keep dreaming that yes, there's new things that we don't know about that we want to learn. And learning, by the way, learning is a great way to fight aging, at least brain aging, and
That's
keeping
right.
our
Keep the
purpose,
brain
right?
active.
So I think, I would say I love to talk to you, to your husband, and to tell him, like, look, I was a cardiac surgeon doing procedure all day. Now I'm excited to understand why the heart is moving into that this direction. So yeah, there's a lot of things that we still need to learn, and we have to be humble about it, not
It's
saying
interesting
what
because
is true is.
medicine treats you right when you're having your heart attack. Open the artery, put in a stent, do the intervention, but then the things that biologically could maybe prevent that, like nitric oxide for the blood vessels or these glycocalyx, getting rid of the proteins, having an mRNA shot that can improve your lipid profiles. These interventions are coming, but it's super exciting times. So I just think it's really going to take a while for any of this to come into mainstream medicine. It's interesting.
Yeah. So it depends the I mean it depends the window of how do you assess time, right? So think about all the innovation we find in the past century in medicine. Most innovation and discovery happened in the past century. So in terms of civilization and humanity, it went really fast, right? Now, I think, when you look at the career of a doctor, let's say you work until like 65, that's at least this is what it is in the most European country, or even, a little bit later, right? I think we still have, you and I, the opportunity to see so many things happening. If you look at GLP-1, the first GLP-1 was discovered, what, 20 years ago, maybe? And so only right now, right, it's becoming
20
something that
years.
really right, only impacts population at scale, and that's going to have tremendous economic saving, and probably hopefully some years of quality life saved. So yes, it takes time, and I think what we need to do is, and this is what I admire the work you do, is being pioneering things. So in the curve of adoption is, I think we're still at the beginning. The pioneer and early adopters, I think, and there's something like the chiasm we call, where we need to pass that, right, to kind of making mainstream. And you're always going to have the laggard, the people deny always everything. They will be late. They don't like it. They think it's changing the way they practice. It's a threat to them. But that's okay. We need as well to work with those people, right, to have open discussion, to make sure that we involve everyone and we include everyone in this change. So yes, I think it takes too long because you and I are impatient. When you're an entrepreneur, you're always impatient, right? And I am impatient to make it happen. But yet, I think we have such an amazing opportunity where my kid, Tyrone, was 11. I think he's going to see, whenever he's going to enter his adult life, a new type of medicine where he's going to have, probably technology monitoring it without thinking about it. Several doctors are trained or, to guide him while technology is doing a lot of work in the background, right? And so I think in the future, in such a positive way, where we don't die from infectious disease anymore, chronic diseases like cardiovascular, cardiovascular disease won't exist probably anymore,
I
right?
agree.
So
I agree. It's
yeah.
going to be amazing. I'm in aesthetics. I do facial plastics and surgery, and it's really interesting to see the crossover of new technologies. And aesthetics is a fast-moving place. So we're seeing things like exosomes, platelet-derived growth factors, recombinant DNA-derived growth factors, in addition to, of course, stem cell injections, fat transfer injections, all the things that we're doing in aesthetics. I feel that we're a great space for longevity medicine to come into, and you're seeing that in med spas today. So, of course,
Yeah.
like there's so much to talk about there because I believe that we should be regulated, but I'm also excited to see what people are doing that's not quite regulated yet. Like people are doing peptides, and with RFK recently mentioning that he's going to allow more research to go forward regarding these peptides that have it's never been allowed to pre the FDA previously prohibited compounding of certain peptides. Just curious, what are your thoughts on that, and how that's going to help change our industry a little faster to have some governmental backing?
Yeah, I think what is really interesting on all your remarks is we need an alignment between innovation and then standardization, right? It's hard to create standard before we have an innovation, right? And so I think if you look at the same way it was done in technology in a way, you have to discover something. And some let's take peptide and stem cell. I've been there for many decades right now. As yes, we know what works and what doesn't, but we don't have the standardization. So I think it is important to start linking both, right? You cannot have innovation alone, right? It's like having a car that runs really fast and but without getting any regulation. That's crazy. You don't want anyone in your family driving this type of car. I think it's the same for health, right? You want to make sure that any innovation that gets into the mainstream gets standardized, tested, validated, and safe. And so I think there is a lot of new initiative, and not only in the U.S. I think there is different, first of all, in the U.S. there is different state doing that, right? You see in Montana they're trying to fast track a clinical. Clinical research. Right now, there's the first with ARPA-H, the first testing of a clinical trial involving a drug, not focused on disease, but focused on aging, endpoints. And so, I think it is interesting to see that. Yes, there was some discussion I know on the podcast. There's as well some latest FDA, as well a recommendation on peptide. I think it is important to have a communication between all actors of the ecosystem. We will never avoid the strong commercial interest of bad actors, right? But I think what is need to be privileged is communication, like always, right? And I think it's everyone has to have an open mindset to make proposal as well. It is important to come to the table, to discuss at the table, to have strong proposal. And I think there's a lot of physician involved in those discussions. So I truly applaud, whoever have an initiative to start bringing things to safe intervention, safe solution to mainstream, to the public. I think it is really good. But even that at the global level, right? We're talking about America, but at the global level, we need to have discussion between standard, right? Right. And so I think this is where we can play a small role as longevity docs, is bringing people together around the table and communicating and unifying those voices and uniting doctors together. And they don't have to agree on everything, right? It's like a Thanksgiving dinner. You don't have to agree with everyone, right? Like your
No, you
uncle is like,
pick and
why are
choose.
you? They can choose, right? But I think everyone can have a voice to have a great expertise and bringing I would say an educated and informed opinion. And that's the same way doctors are practicing. They've been practicing the same way for many years. Is when you have a patient in front of you, you gather all the evidence you have. Some of the data you have collected, and then you make an informed decision, right? Your diagnostic and then the intervention. You don't have to go to, all the books and say, page 24, it was said we cannot use that. No. What is said is in whatever books of medicine, and that's why you have to apply medicine and practice medicine with that in mind, is you have to help the patient the best way you can, right? And first, what we said is do not harm. And
Exactly.
right. And so I think, I mean, do we have to apply the Hippocrates oath from, many, many years ago? Or do we have to adapt it? I don't have the answer on that, but I think everyone should have at least the ethical drive, the knowledge, and the agency to say, okay, I want to practice the best medicine I can in 2026. What does that mean? Where do I get my knowledge? What information do I provide to my patient, and what are the type of of solution I can safely provide and offer, right? And so it's not that easy, right? You have to have a great judgment and great knowledge base to be able to have this judgment.
I think the hardest thing is finding time in a busy physician schedule to sit down and read for 2 or 3 hours a day. Like, it's almost as if you're back in school and training and you're teaching yourself this curriculum that you really have to almost put together yourself. Like, Longevity Docs is amazing because it has it all in one place. But if you're a physician out there in the community, you may not even know about this resource. I'm glad people are hearing about it. But it's that investment in time where you sit down and read through the evidence and the literature and you make yourself understand the vocabulary of like all of this molecular biology that we learned, in college is now at the forefront of what we need to know every day. Like, if I'm going to talk about CRISPR and Cas9 and,
Exactly.
mRNA technologies, my own physician head and mindset has to be able to be, with that lingo and able to explain it in simple terms to a patient. So it's fascinating time. I think if you're, we have a lot of people that are in aesthetics and longevity, want to get into longevity medicine. What do you think is a good route for people who want to bring longevity into their practice to start with?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you know that better than anyone is the skin is really the largest organ, right, of the body. And so it's only a reflection on what's going on inside. So once you go for the aesthetic, really the cosmetic procedure, people want lasting result, right? They want to understand right now, obviously they're becoming smarter. They want to understand the root cause of their skin aging. And so, yes, age. And years, right, impact the way our body function and how skin and under the skin and muscle function. But what I think is really important is to have lasting impact is what do you have to change, right, beside a procedure, right? And so yes, you can start with the lifestyle. You can have cellular pathway to optimize and understanding why this create an impact on your skin. So I would say for this community, really understanding that skin is only the reflection. What is the journey, right? How do you come to this impact on the skin? And that's what I think it is interesting because I'm sure you're seeing a lot of patients right now with the impact of GLP-1, for instance, right?
Oh,
So you,
definitely. Yeah, that's
definitely,
huge.
right? That's
It's
huge.
just.
So understanding how GLP-1 function and why it impacts the skin, right? So that could be the skin quality, the skin density, the skin, morphology, the skin dynamics. It impacts as well the collagen, the fat, and the muscle under it, right? But it can improve as well several other factors. And so I think it's really understanding the physiopathology of it and all those different pathways, because as soon as you understand it, you become interested in it. And now you want to talk about it and educate your patient, saying, by the way, do you know that's the impact? Do you know what you could do, right, to prevent that? And I think you're starting to become as well the trusted guide for your patient, having all this knowledge, combining traditional medicine, longevity medicine, and cosmetic and regenerative care. I think it's a new era where we don't have a specialty anymore, right? And so once they come to you, it is hard to say, hey, I won't do any test or I don't know anything about those tests, right? So you better go to see another platform, right? Because I don't do that. No, once they're in, they trust you. They trust you for the surgery. They trust you for the procedure on their face. That's a lot of trust they get that you get. And so I think I would say because they trust you so much, right? Bringing even more value. Right, bring more value through the knowledge, through the education, and then those people will be forever grateful, and they will stay patient for a long time. You're pro gonna provide great value and great outcome. So yeah, learning is for me that's the ultimate knowledge. And by the way, you're saying it's hard. I totally agree with you to find the time, but knowledge is gonna be free. It's almost free right now, right? With
There's too
AI.
much knowledge. There's literally too much to read every
Exactly.
day.
So that's where you need to have like this curation, right? What do I need to do? Like this is the gold standard of my baseline and my foundation. right? Yes, you can read everything. That's what we do as doctors. We read a lot every day, right? From the news to journal and papers to the latest innovation. You just mentioned so many of them. How do we know what works, what doesn't, right? Where do we need to learn about what we need to learn? And so that's why we created this certified longevity docs program, just trying to make life easier when you're building your practice, when you still practice, when you want to transform your practice. And it's 100 hours, but you can do it from your car, from an app. And now we develop our own AI where every morning you can have a 10 minutes quiz with Hippo, Hippocrates, right?
Nice.
And
That's nice.
now it can teach you, whenever you have time, instead of scrolling social media to find the information, boom, you ask the question and it comes from our proprietary knowledge base of 100 hours of training that we design, right? And so I think it is a new way of learning. You know what, just do not want to sit in a library and opening and books. You want to have a concrete discussion with a colleague, and now the colleague can be an AI platform that helps you really understand longevity care, longevity science, longevity medicine faster and even
I'm so
better.
excited. After people hear this podcast, you're going to get a whole bunch of new people wanting to sign up. So
Yeah, look, no,
excited.
I think, well, thank you so much for doing that. I think it is important. Like, again, the education is one of the most important thing, or you
It
want
really
your
is. What
you want to
ex
educate your kids. And so
Right.
can we educate the next generation of doctors? That's exciting time right now.
You know what? It's a challenge. Even I tell my own kids, like starting at age 20, you start to deteriorate, but they don't quite believe it yet. But at least we're getting them the right supplements and the right diet, and they're doing all the things. But what excites you about studies you've heard that are potentially coming up this year? Is it Yamanaka factors and David Sinclair's new clinical trials that they're launching? Do you think we're going to hit some big interventions this year that show us that we can literally teach ourselves to turn on the anti-aging mechanisms?
I think this is a cellular reprogramming. I think it's really something that's super interesting. What I think is the most interesting to me is probably not the intervention itself. There's so many that are really really cool. Is the shift, right? The shift that we see at our society right now. There's two shifts that I see. First of all, policies are changing. They're starting to listen and they're starting to see that aging could be associated to too many diseases and could be itself considered as a disease. And so changing endpoints and understanding there's new biomarker of aging can be a new way to develop therapies, medicine that can target those, premature aging or age-related diseases. I'm really excited about this mindset shift. There's another thing that I'm excited about is I believe everyone will be able to study their own aging trajectory in the next 5 years. The way to do that is, I call it ambient longevity. We'll be able to gather so much information, so many information coming from our own body to understand what works, what doesn't. And so I think this is the most exciting part of it is the global knowledge, right, that we can amass and to understand how life is functioning, right, within our body. So there's two things. Isomorphic Labs, the new startup that the founder of Google, DeepMind, Demis Hassabi, is building. I'm excited about that. Jensen Huang from NVIDIA said that AI and computing biology is going to be the next frontier in civilization. We'll be able to understand the billions of interaction our cells are having every single second. I'm excited about that. I think this is, I'm starting to see that as a kid, saying, wow, the same way we're discovering space, I think now we're getting deeper and deeper. We have the opportunity to understand life and biology. So yeah, the intervention is something that again is really reactive, is going to save a lot of lives. But if we start understanding how our body is functioning, and we don't understand that yet. Like we're gonna have so many interaction with understanding of the interaction between systems and organs and environment, I think that's one of the most beautiful things that's going to happen for me as a physician, trying to understand how the body functions and why it functions this way and what breaks and how we can fix it. That's the revolution of humanity, I think.
That is the revolution. When I look at these charts, sometimes I'm looking at biochemistry reactions and charts, and even just learning the NAD pathways, the number of arrows and interconnections, and that like the human brain can tackle and understand that, but boy, does it take time to integrate it. And like imagine that's in every system, in every cell, in every portion of our body, and like we, the AI and machine learning aspect can literally process that, simplify it, and bring together thinking that the human brain takes, it takes a lifetime. Like that's why we have researchers that work 10 years, 20 years in a field to be experts, So
Yeah,
I'm excited
on one
to
subject. You're
see
right. On one subject, on
one
one,
small subject in one tiny area of the, the cornea
exactly.
or the retina or the exact area that they focus on, but to bring it all together is a whole different conversation. So yeah, I'm very excited for that too. Are there any last misconceptions that you want to clear up that you must get questions all the time from patients, providers, physicians? Anything that.
Yeah, I think what is exciting right now is a lot of people really focus on the solution. They want a quick fix,
Yeah.
right? And so a misconception is associating longevity medicine to peptide and NAD, right? And I think it is really reductive, or it is intentional, or is a lack of understanding or knowledge, right? And so I think it is a misconception that a field really trying to understand the mechanism of aging and how we can intervene, right? And how we can prevent those future diseases for humanity is only linked to several, small intervention. And so making that summary is I think really reductive. So that's for me a misconception of semantic or are we all even talking about the same thing, right? And on the other side, obviously there's a world where a part of this type of medicine can feel like reactive medicine. You have this, get this new drug, right? And so then you're again in the same pattern than traditional medicine. You wait for the disease, you get the magic potion, right? And so I think this is the misconception. I think it should start as early as possible. I don't have the age to give you, but in our group, we have close to 500 doctors in our chat group, and one of the questions was like, when should we start, right, for talking about longevity and prevention for kids? And I think disease starts really early in the kids, right? And several type of disease. But even if you take a look at diabetes and obesity, right, especially in the US, such a large number of kids that can have could have prevent, right, in terms of education. We don't even have to do testing. You can see it already, in a wrong trajectory. So this is where I think is the misconception, is we're not really trying to extend, life and live forever, right? It's not the immortality quest. It is really trying to provide a best life that a human can live in 2026, right? With reducing suffering. Imagine a world where there's no suffering from those diseases. I mean, that'd be amazing, right? And so I think is, how do we get into this new era of saying, oh, we don't have rabies anymore, we don't have, the Spanish flu, we don't have, like, that was a word, a few centuries ago that didn't exist, and now he exists, right? And so I want to bring always perspective in that. I think what we thought, 200 years ago was not possible, that was the norm. Like, would you think that, but look, things are coming back. Some diseases are coming back. So it's never a one battle. So I think again is, let's get some perspective. Let's think about humanity first, not only our practice, how can that impact civilization? We always underestimate the power of human, right? The social connection and the community and the purpose and how we can help people. I want to always, I started as a humanitarian before I was a surgeon, right? When I was 21. And so, and then we still want to develop, things that are bringing, citizen together, right? We're building a program in Africa where, we eventually be able to help people understand their health better, diagnose themselves, easier, and train the doctors in at the last mile in villages that where people don't have access to anything. So I think we don't want to discount that to the quick fixes of the things that we see on social media, right? Is
That's true. I'm almost starting to see a little bit of social anxiety about tracking all, every person wearing a biologic tracker and the metrics that they have to follow and the routines that seem like so obsessively over the top that that I watch some of the routines with fascination because it just feels like you can't maybe attain happiness when you're having anxiety about checking how many hours you slept and how many grams of protein you're taking. And did you do all of your interventions and supplements at the right time? Like that's not a life as we've seen, Brian Johnson and some of the other biohackers doing such complexities. I feel like I almost feel like my current patients have anxiety too about like not doing enough or do they're doing too much or they don't know what to do with the data and they lose track and perspective of what human existence really is.
Oh, you're so right. I mean, even myself, I used to wear all type of wearables, and now I'm trying to really understand my body without measuring it. And so I cycle it sometimes, like I don't need that right now, or when I know I'm gonna need those data to keep me in track, then I bring it back. And I think is really being humble and in a way that we practice or have, learn or teach our longevity mindset. Some people don't need it. Some people want to monitor and to control a lot. I think it's all about the personality as well, right? The personality trait. And being obsessive on one thing is never good, whether it's for your health, whether it's for another addiction, right? And so I believe you don't want to trans you don't want to you don't want to pivot your obsession, right? And that's why I see sometimes people can say, oh, now I'm obsessed about my data, but I don't see anyone anymore because I cannot go out anymore, right? So like, yeah, it's interesting. You monitor your, right? So even myself, sometimes like, oh my God, it's late. Should I go to this dinner? Right? And when I say late for me, it's like, 8. It's like, oh my God, it's late dinner. In Europe, we do late dinner. Sometimes like, man, you have to relax, let's go to this dinner, enjoy, and then you wake up 2 hours later. That's it. So I think is how do we enjoy life is I think the number one priority of longevity. When you start your longevity journey and I designed my whole longevity canvas because as an architect of my longevity, I wanted to do that, didn't exist. I mean, health is only one pillar of it. The biology is one pillar. Right. All the rest is you are designing a life that you want to enjoy living every single day. That's why people invest time and resources in their longevity plan. Why? They just want to get another year, another hour, another time with the loved one, another week traveling, another year with the children. So to me, it doesn't make sense to spend too much time obsessing to control because you're wasting this time enjoying.
Yeah,
Now,
taking away
if
the
you
time for life living.
exactly, life living. But then at the same time, if you live too fast and live too much, then you consume it. So again, it's all about balance, homeostasis at the cellular level, homeostasis at the civilization and societal level. I think it's all about balance in life. You cannot have too much on anything. The dose is the poison, right? I don't know how you say that, right? There's a saying, yeah.
The dose is the poison. Yeah, no, I know what you mean, but I'm trying to remember the expression. We say that, yeah, the dose is the duration, like, the magnitude of the effect. But I'm really right on the same page with you. I think that we can be obsessed with health tracking, and I think I agree. I take breaks. I throw out all my once in a while, I take all my supplements, and then I'll have weeks go by where I take nothing. And that is just
What do you track that you don't like anymore? Let's say.
I stopped wearing my iPhone, my Apple Watch because
Okay.
I think I have, there's low level EMF that's pinging your body all the time. Your phone,
You're right.
your wrist. The same thing with the sleep trackers. I don't like the idea of wearing any electronics. Like, I really feel that EMF is going to affect our cellular function, and it's disruptive, and definitely no more headphones. But I did all kinds of testing, like generation lab testing and testing, trying to look for my biologic age versus chronologic age. So I had a phase of going through that. And then all of this just, it was nice to pinpoint certain organ systems aging faster, but also it just kind of says you're aging. It's like, yes, we're slowly deteriorating. So now I'm focused much more on, I think the daily interventions are like some solid supplements. I have maybe top five that I take. What are your top five that you take right now?
I mean, look, again, I never mention my supplement because people, you know,
Well,
thinks
write
it's
it down. We're going to write it down. Take
you know,
notes.
the idea is how can you really supply yourself with what you need that has been validated and that you think is going to optimize today, based on the recommendation of your physician. And so for me, I'm trying to optimize where I have the most upside, which is my cardiovascular health. You know, I have genetic, you know, predisposition, unfortunately. And so I'm trying to build, you know, whatever resilience I can, and optimize my cardiovascular biomarker. So mostly I would say my routine, is the most important based on compared to the supplement. So I love doing my hot yoga, my cardio if I can, trying to exercise and move every day. And yesterday, you know, I was at the gym, I was, you know, doing some strength training and say, oh, I didn't stretch, I think, this week. I don't know. And that's for me was one of the most important. When I wake up, I can feel my body. It's like, do you think I slept enough? I slept enough, right? Sometimes, you know, I have to, you know, I'm sending emails a little bit late at night. And then I start, you know, looking at, oh, I need to look at this study. Or I starting scrolling on Twitter, cool stuff on AI. Oh, man, I'm like, wow. You know, it's like, no, I'm not perfect. I can tell you I'm not perfect at all. So to me, it's not this like, I would say 3% incremental, right? Success is how can I maintain 80% or 90% of this routine for the next 20 years? And I know I won't ingest, you know, every single day, you know, something that's going to only increase 1%. What I want to do is focus a lot of time of my time on the things that are really important down the road, long term. So one thing I love doing is calling my friends, right? And so friends that are, you know, I'm from France, I live in New York, so friends I don't see all the time, but I grew up with, I went to med school with, and so I think it gives me peace, right? I think it must improve my HRV and my, you know, parasympathetic, you know, system in a way. And I like that. I think this kind of my daily supplement is sometimes that, you know, I get on the bike, I look at one friend I'm going to call, and even if we didn't talk for, you know, several months or even, you know, maybe a year sometime, it's like, hey, how are you doing? Let's have a chat. I have 30 minutes. So I love to do that. This is kind of my the routine I love doing. I love cooking as well. And so, you know, getting my time of meditation, cooking, and then cooking for people that I love as well. So you see, there is, yes, what we can do at the cellular level, but what can we do at our, you know, in our environment, right? How can we do to help people and to lead with generosity, kindness, and abundance,
I
right? And
agree.
so
You
how
are
can
such a good role model for that, David, because I see you on your Instagram stories and you're in the sunlight. You're doing, strength training, but it's also your own body weight often that you're lifting, which I think is incredible. And like, it's just really a healthy life because you are engaging with this nice community. You're stimulating your brain. You're eating right. So you're doing all the things that, for me, that's like being a role model for all of us in life.
Oh, no, thank you for saying that. I'm trying to be at least a 50% role model
50% bad boy.
on all the buckets, at least on all the buckets. I mean, think about it. If you 50% where you can be in the future on all the buckets, I think it's already amazing. So
It
I'm proud of not of myself, but I'm proud of the effort that,
is.
you know, I've been applying for many years, and now I wasn't really good, you know, when I was practicing surgery every day, you know. I didn't sleep a lot. I
Our
was eating
profession doesn't
shit.
teach self-health, you know? It
Exactly.
doesn't.
So I'm proud of the journey, and so if I can help few people, I think it's amazing. So that's why I really encourage, doctors to communicate and to, really inspire first circle, the second circle, the patient and others. I think it's a great way to walk the talk, right? And again, you don't have to be perfect. Like I said, you were mentioning, several people are famous for, pushing their biomarker to the next level. I think that's one thing, but being how can we get, 80% of the population to reach, 80% of the great outcome is all about having a plan, routine, a discipline, and then believing in it that you will improve. I think someone said that happiness is about personal growth.
That's
So
right.
can you, right? Is can you
That's
grow
so
your
true.
biomarker to the next level or your impact to the next level? For me, it's the same. A lot of people look at, metabolomics biomarker. I'm looking at macro biomarker. What is the impact in life? What is the impact on the other side of the planet? And so it's all about, how do you use your reference system to situate yourself in your life? And so, if you can impact millions of people, that's kind of my biomarker, and that's what's going to make me happy. That's what is the purpose, and probably that's why, hopefully, it's going to keep me, live longer, right? Because
Yeah, the
because you're
Japanese,
driven by something.
like those Japanese principles of finding your purpose in life and your, you need to have a mission for all of the things that we do that unifies your goals and makes you want to wake up every day. So I think that you are one of the people who has really set this longevity movement into cultural knowledge, and it's definitely, I'm so grateful to be part of the Longevity Docs group and to have your leadership kind of innovating how we're going to take this charge in medicine. So, where can people find you if they want to get more
Oh,
information
thank you.
or touch
I
base?
mean, the best way is obviously the longevity docs, .org website. We're always available for the community. It's really now the leading platform for longevity physician. Could you imagine when we started, we're like 10 or 15 now,
Yeah, very early on.
across 68 countries, almost like territories. Some are not countries, but it's amazing. And then Dr. David Liu on social media, and obviously LinkedIn, Instagram is something somewhere you can find me, or in Cannes, in person. I think, I love the in person, giving a right real life hug is nothing can replace that. So in Cannes in
Exactly.
June, 9 to 11, we have our submit and award, and the theme of this year is back to medicine. Right, inspired by Back to the Future movie, because it's in Cannes,
Yes.
obviously. And so back to medicine means a lot, right? I think technology allows us doctor to go back to the root, and to the values and the principle and foundation of what should be medicine.
I love it. I definitely think everyone should, check out Longevity Docs platform, start learning. I wanted to learn because of my own aging process, doing all the interventions I can for my patients and bringing all the most high-tech things to our practice. Thank you so much for joining us, David, and please keep doing all the hard work, do all the good
Thank you
work.
so much, Dr. K. Thank you so much. And I'm really impressed by all the great work you're doing. You're educating, you are teaching, you're doing going to conferences, you're seeing your patient, you're training your team. I mean, this is what true longevity leaders are, impacting everyone around them in a circle. So this is thanks to people like you that we can do whatever we do at Longevity Docs. So I appreciate you. I'm grateful for you to be part of our community, and thank you for inspiring other, the next generation of doctors. This is what we need to do as physicians, as the torch.
I love it. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our new skin longevity line, which has NAD precursors, mitochondrial boosters, pigment perfectors, and of course, GHK copper, and my very own tripeptide collagen elastin complex. So I hope you guys will check that out. One more thing you can do in terms of innovating the skin, which is the biggest organ and the protector of all the longevity. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.